Good morning, or if you're like me and still on East Coast time, good afternoon. So I'm going to talk today about slow sand filters, and this is part of a larger project that's going on not only at Clemson but at other universities across the country, part of the Clean Water 3 project, where we're helping ornamental growers reduce, remediate, and recycle their irrigation runoff water. So I'm going to talk about one of the projects that we're working on as part of this, which is slow sand filters. So for those of you that aren't aware, this is what a slow sand filter is. And there it is. So if we have water coming in from a source, in the case of what I'll be talking about today, it's our pond that we recycle from. So we've got the water coming in the inflow pipe. Oops. And this, there we go. And then it goes into this water tank that's filled with at least 3 feet of water. And then at the bottom of that water tank, unfortunately, they wanted you to use a pointer, but it's kind of not working very well. So at the bottom of that is this Schmutzdecke layer. So it's basically called a dirty floor in German, for those of you that speak German. So it's basically a few inches deep of this kind of bacterial, microbial layer of just intense activity. So there's the physical filtration from the sand, but a lot of the remediation work is actually done by the bacteria that are there. And then you've got additional sand layer here, which is basically the same sand, just that it doesn't have the microorganisms in it. And then you've got rock on the bottom where it helps you get the water out of there. So the way that ours works is we've got a PVC pipe with holes in it, and then that comes out of our slow sand filters. And then it goes to an outflow pipe, and either you can put it into a tank or back into a pond, whatever you're trying to do with it. So slow sand filters have been around for a long time. They used to be used to treat drinking water before the advent of our modern technologies. So this really is a technology that's been developed over a long period of time and then kind of fell out of favor, and now we're seeing if we can use it again for nursery production. So it's very effective. I mean, it's been used for a number of different things. For example, it's highly effective for bacteria, protozoa, viruses, decreasing turbidity, as well as reducing heavy metals. We wanted to see whether or not we could remove plant diseases with it. So there's relatively little power that's required. A pump that pumps the water into the top of the tank is pretty much all you need. Everything else is gravity flow. And it requires no chemicals. So there's a lot of benefits for growers. One of the drawbacks is that it does require redundancy, and that's so the literature all says that you need a 4-week establishment period before these things are considered to be highly effective. So the microbial community is developing, and so it's considered that you don't have treatment efficacy in those first 4 weeks. So we wanted to test that. Another thing that is true about these systems is that they're slow. So 2 to 5 gallons per minute per square foot. That for our 8-foot diameter tanks, that's about 100 to 250 gallons per hour that it's able to treat. So not, you know, high throughput here, so it is a consideration. And also that they do clog. We have pre-filters on ours that are about 100 micron filters that get rid of the larger material, so we don't have as much of an issue with clogging. So can slow sand filters be used to remove plant pathogens from runoff water? That was our research question that we wanted to answer. And this is our experimental setup. You can see, I'll just kind of walk you through this real quickly. So we've got water coming from the pond that's pumped into what we call our reservoir pit. So we have other water flowing into this area, and this kind of comes in a little bit later, so I wanted to mention it now. So we have other experiments that we're running with plant pathogens, and so we wanted to be able to capture that water and treat it. So if we need to, we can pull water from the pond, but we also have overland flowing into this pit. So it goes, there's two pumps, one for each tank, that goes from this pit to each of the tanks. They're both controlled by individual float valves. So when a particular tank needs water, it turns on the pump, pumps it back up, float valve turns off. So it's a relatively simple system. And then we have these white pipes here that are flowing out from each of the tanks, and we can either put them back into the pond for sampling, or if we're not sure that their water is being clean enough, we can put it back in there and recycle it into the other tank. And it also then can go back into the pond. And we've got this ISCO sampler, which will come in for the second set of experiments that I'm going to talk about. And this ISCO sampler was set to sample every 2 hours to see if we were actually missing anything. I'll talk about that in a little bit. So this is a picture of the setup. This is what I'm going to call tank two. This is tank one. Here's the pit right here, and then the ISCO in the very corner here, and you can see the pond in the background there. So this is our experimental design, how we set everything up. So as far as a pathogen goes, we used Phytophthora nicotiani, which was grown in cultures or maintained at the plant pathogen lab at Clemson University. And basically what we did is we had a suspension of zoospores at about 300,000 zoospores per milliliter. And then we added that to our tanks. So to the top of the tanks where the water was, and we had a final concentration around 25 zoospores per mil. And what we found from the literature was that, you know, anywhere from 10 to kind of 30 was the kind of general range for what you would typically put in. So we had to put in a lot because we had a large volume. And then these zoospores were prepared weekly. First experiment that we did is we set it up for 6 weeks. We wanted to look at establishment. So basically we took these slow sand filters that hadn't had any water going through them, and we wanted to see how they would do kind of right off the bat. So we turned them on and then started our sampling process to see what would happen. So with the Phytophthora, one thing to mention is that they're negatively gravitropic, so they want to go to the surface. So they're not very good swimmers, so the flow rate that we have could potentially pull them down through, so we wanted to see how all that would kind of work out. So on the bottom left here, so we have, this is the pre-filter water, and then this is the post-filter water. So this is the water on top of the slow sand filter, and then on the bottom, this is after it went through the system and came out the PVC pipe. As you can see, it's a lot clearer, a lot cleaner, so the filter is doing a good job of removing the turbidity. And then here you can see an example of, these are the Phytophthora plates. So this is the plating bioassay that we do. So we use rhododendron leaves, and I'll explain that more on the next slide. But you can see these white discs around the disc in the middle. So those are all the hyphae from the Phytophthora. So you can see in this example here, the ones on the top have Phytophthora in them, and the ones on the bottom do not. And then there's just an example of what we did. So we would pour the Phytophthora all the way around so it was evenly dispersed. And then when we took our samples, we would take a liter of water from each of the four quadrants of the tank to make sure that we were getting a composite sample. So this is the rhododendron leaf bioassay that we used. So basically, we would collect rhododendron leaves, sterilize them with isopropanol, and then punch holes in them into those white plastic buckets that were 4-liter buckets. So we would float the leaf baits in there for 3 days, take those leaf baits out. So these circles here are the leaf baits. So take those leaf baits out after 3 days, plate them onto a selective media, and then we would look for the hyphae in the lab. So these are the results from the project. So fortunately, very boring. So we have the solid lines here are the pre-tank. So pre-tank, we had Phytophthora, and typically it can live 2 to 3 days without a host. So we're seeing that Phytophthora is going down over time, which is what we would expect. And we had zero breakthrough of Phytophthora at any point. This is basically 6 weeks of sampling. On the x-axis, we've got the days after the Phytophthora was added, and then on the y-axis, how many baits out of 10 that were infected. So we've got high infection rates at the very beginning when the Phytophthora are going to be most active, and it drops off as we go through the week. And then this is we had another experiment set up that, so we would drop the Phytophthora on Monday, and then on Thursday, they were doing another experiment. So this little blip here is actually the Phytophthora running off from another experiment, being treated by the filter. So we just had another slug of Phytophthora, much less, that came through, and we found that it was obviously able to remediate that as well. So we ran the same experiment. We wanted to see if there's a temperature effect of slow sand filters. So we kind of let them sit for a few months, cleaned them off, and then set them up to start growing, start going again, and very similar results that we had the Phytophthora that were infecting, and then over time you see the Phytophthora were less and less effective. We didn't have the additional slug of Phytophthora coming through, but we had no post-filter infections. So another thing that we were concerned about was that we were sampling once or twice a day. We sampled the day that we put the Phytophthora in to make sure they were there. And then the evening the first day, the morning the next day, and then every afternoon following that. So we wanted to make sure that we weren't missing anything. So we set up this ISCO autosampler to collect samples every 2 hours for 48 hours to make sure that we weren't, you know, potentially missing anything. What we found, and this is by week, because basically the first of the 4 weeks, this is for the second experiment in the wintertime. So during the establishment period, the first week, we found two examples of Phytophthora breaking through. You can see those here at the 4 and the 5 sampling. So this would be 8 hours and 10 hours after the samples were added. We had about an 8 hour hydraulic retention time in our water on the top. So that's, if we expected breakthrough, it would be right at that time. So, you know, we didn't see any breakthrough after the first week. So we think that these sand filters are actually working much better than was reported in the literature. And then, so, wanted to say that there was no Phytophthora that was from 1 week to the next. So when the Phytophthora was added, there was no residual Phytophthora from the week before. We only noted two breakthrough events that in the post samples during the second experiment. And we think that's more related to just the establishment of the biofilm layer than anything else. And we think that this is a really good tool for growers to use for Phytophthora remediation, because it's a major concern, you know, to put pathogens back on your plant. So if they can find a way that's effective, that's a good thing for them. And obviously, as always, more research is needed. So I'd like to do some work on nutrients, agrochemicals, and other things like that to see how effective these systems are at treating other types of runoff. And with that, I'd like to thank NIFA for funding for this project, and I'll take any questions.
Questions about filters? Yes.
So this is a little more related to food crops, but do you think these sand filters would be effective in removing human pathogens, like E. coli or bacteria?
There's actually other research that's been done. So the question was, would be these sand filters likely remove human pathogens as well? So the reality is that somebody who's done a fair bit of research on slow sand filters, what they said to me is that anything that has a high energy bond, there will be something that will take advantage of that and you know, take that energy out of it. So it's likely that, you know, that human pathogens could be treated as well. I mean, it's, you know, they're slow, so that's one of the biggest things, is the volume of water that can be treated over time. So
kind of a follow-up, would scaling up the size of these filters solve that problem?
Yes. I mean, so you run into an issue with taking land out of production. I mean, that's, and then storage on the back end. You know, those are the two biggest things. But they actually have very large slow sand filters in Europe that they use effectively. And so it is definitely possible to scale them up. And there's growers that have, one that I know of in Maryland that has a 1 acre slow sand filter. So do we have time for more questions?
Yes.
Okay. In the back.
Any issues with annual startup in more northern areas that might experience freezing or anything like that?
So the question was about more northern areas and freezing. So the reality is that, you know, this work was done in South Carolina, and we did have some freezing of our pipes. So some of the data wasn't able to be collected, mostly in the ISCOs. So the systems are large, so it takes more to freeze. But at the same time, presumably you're not using water when it's frozen. So, I mean, you know, that's why we wanted to do this here, where we could do cold weather, you know, because the concern was, well, how effective are these microorganisms when the temperatures are lower? And what we found is that they're still highly effective. So, I mean, basically, the times when you'd be using water, you can still use these freeze-thaw cycles, things like that. I mean, still has to be answered in a northern climate. So, I mean, that is definitely a concern.
Right. Got a question?
So, good question. So the question is, what's the Schmutzdecke layer? So it's just, we didn't do anything to establish it. It is just microorganisms that are in the air, and they just basically find this, and they just infect it. I didn't mention it in the talk, but we did do sampling. So we're basically looking at microbial communities that are in these and how they change over time. So every week, along with our sampling, we also took microbial sampling that was analyzed using a MiSeq. It's a high-throughput DNA sequencing. And we've got the results back. We just need to go through it. And we're seeing that they actually did change over time in which communities were most prevalent there. So we can get down to species level with that. So that's interesting as well. Yes?
Your picture, I think, showed you had covers on those tanks?
So the first experiment was... So the question is about covers on the tank.
Okay,
first,
things from the air fall in there.
So the reality is that stuff is in the air, stuff is in the water. I mean, you know, it. From everything that I've read about slow sand filters, is you don't put anything in there, it finds its way in. So the first experiment that we did was open to the air, but we saw a lot of algae in the Schmutzdecke layer, and so we wanted to make sure that, you know, people that have covered ones wouldn't have a problem as well. So we basically, the first one was uncovered, second one we covered. So we didn't really see much of a difference with how effective they were. So that was a good thing.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.